Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by Ting.com. Ting is a mobile phone service that makes sense. Save money with Ting. Pay only for what you use. Ting doesn't require a contract and offers unlimited devices on one shared plan. To save $25 on your first Ting device, visit hamnation.ting.com. That's hamnation.ting.com. By DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. In-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday until 10 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit dxengineering.com/hamnation and by ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 130 for January 16th. 2014, Gordo's CES report and Bob's AGC receiver adjustment. Hello, everybody. It's K9EID in the warm Ozarks. It's warm here today. It's been warm all week. If you remember, last week I was in my fur coat because it was cold. I mean, like minus whatever, but it's been real nice this week. I even went and put up an antenna the other day. And if we have time, I'm going to show you a little piece of a video that I took. It was really kind of fun, and I thought we'd see what's happening. But guess who's back? It's Gordo, and he's from Las Vegas. Did you win any money? Eh, you don't do all that stuff in Las Vegas. You went to the CES show, you lucky dog. How are you doing?
We're doing fine, and you can't drop a quarter anymore in a Las Vegas slot machine because they don't take quarters or silver dollars. It's all paper. And Las Vegas CES will show everyone all the excitement about that. Quartz Fest coming up this coming Sunday runs through the 26th in Quartzsite, Arizona. Puerto Rico Convention coming up January 24th and 25th. And let me tell you, Bob, we are ready for Quartz Fest. Chris Weed, KR1SS, has got high-speed multimedia mesh net going. Ward K7PO, John KB8RSA, Ron N1AHH will have live video links. So we hope to see you a week from today, live and direct from Quartz Fest. Bob, back to you.
Yeah, that'd be super duper. Yeah, it's always fun for you, and we all like to see what you're doing there. Don, I guess it's not happy there in the football world, but what else is going on down there?
No, the Saints fans are not pleased. Of course, it's hard to beat the Seahawks any day on a good day, but with weather the way it was and not getting on the scoreboard until the fourth quarter, it was a recipe for disaster. But that's all right. We're still proud of our Saints and our new defensive coordinator, Rob Ryan, and fear the hair for next year because we're coming. Back to you.
Oh, okay. We're ready. And Dale, how are you feeling? You were under the weather. Are you okay now? Everything good?
We're doing pretty good, Bob. Thanks a lot. Yeah, last week had to take that break. We had just finally got some antibiotics the weekend before that and started to get over things last week. So we're doing pretty good this week. Got a great video about one of the first W1AW portable operations there around the country for you tonight, Bob. Go ahead.
Okay, good. Yeah, I've been working some of those, and I hope everybody else is that's watching. It's really a great thing, so stay tuned, and you'll see some of the videos, and you can get in on some of the fun with the new W1AW, their 100th anniversary. So, well, let's head back to Costa Mesa because we have a whole bunch of pictures coming to us from Gordo and the CES. So let her roll there, Gordon, and tell us all about what's new in the electronic world.
Roger that. Well, the Consumer Electronics Show is the biggie for the West Coast, and it's been doing its thing for 40 years. So, Brian, if you want to go ahead and roll the shots, we'll go ahead. And here it is in downtown Las Vegas, Nevada. It's a four-day show for the trade only. But let me tell you, with a business card, you're in the CES show. And the next shot, Brian, And they give you a big banner out front. The CES show is actually from the Communications Expo back in the early days of the 70s. And it was packed from the moment that they opened up the gates on last Tuesday. Not all areas saw traffic immediately at the first. This is at the Venetian, where they had a tech expo. The Samsung display. Samsung, the number one global top product maker. Look at that. A curved television set. Is that pretty cool? And I had a little scanner with me and not much noise. There was some strange sights when you saw people watching games and TV. And, of course, this was Mr. Display Guy. And, yep, the face was real and he would smile. I have no idea how he did it. And GoPro, for those hams that like to keep track of field day, let me tell you, they have GoPro cameras for every event. And even if you plan to go underwater, not very good propagation underwater, but there you go. And GoPro had a ton of different cameras. And look at all of the accessory manufacturers. They can put a camera on just about anything. And, of course, Ram mounts, we know them from ham radio, real big time in all sorts of mounts. Cobra radar detectors, they are now 3D and 4D. They've never been more sensitive. And, boy, they were really gee-whizzy looking. $200 to $300, non-detectable, and you can tie them into your smartphone. And look at this. It'll even, the smartphone will even decode where the radar speed traps. And look at this on your smartphone. If it looks like you're going to head through a big downpour, they now have automatic routing called Turncast that will take you around what could be a tornado so you don't end up in the ditch. Now, don't short CB Distributing. They've got some neat stuff. They've got scanners, marine radios, you name it. Big display there. And, of course, CB radios were all over the place from the major manufacturers. Uniden says folks want a bigger dial and a bigger S meter and a bigger readout, so they have it. And Cobra has not only a marine radio, but one that is shared with a GMRS service. Look what Uniden did to get a bigger readout. Pretty cool, huh? This was a camera and a handheld radio, either 2.4 or 400 megs. Here's more CB-type radios, and it was fun to see the different manufacturers of CB. And that's Don, KE6BXT, Mr. ATV in the Midland booth, showing off one of his radios. This is Don's car that he can't. No, it isn't. But anyway, some strange motor vehicles, and we saw them all, and we didn't see any radios hanging from underneath those motor vehicles, but it was fun to watch the excitement. There's Uniden again, getting the word from CBers that they want a bigger display. And now Bluetooth microphone as well as DECT, D-E-C-T microphones to keep everyone in touch on their CB radio. There were some legal issues there and they've been overcome. 2,700 milliamp hours for AA batteries, no change from last year. Solar panels, wow, we saw a lot of wattage variations, but When you look at it, it's the voltage that they put out. Still, it's going to cost you $100 for a 1 amp at 12 volts DC. Look at those panels. I'd like to have some of those for Quartz Fest, huh? Now, here's a solar panel powered vehicle. I don't think you run with them when the panel is up. And probably the hardest part of this whole deal is convincing your loved one that there'll be a small little post in between both the driver and the passenger seat. There you go. This is a little better idea, a little canopy made out of solar panels at the CES show. Didn't bring along your keyboard? No problem. Put this little deal there and start typing away, a little interactive keyboard. And for our Dr. Sauter man, look at this. He's going to love this. It's a microscope that gets you right down to SMT level. And George would love that. All right, now this is going to be neat. Watch this. If you have an iPhone, you put this little thing in his left hand on, and Bango, F-L-I-R, turns it into, for under $400, a thermal reading. You got a little cat or a little mountain lion, hopefully at a distance, you can actually see the heat signature. And if your iPhone, they had lots of apps and lots of goodies. This is a radioactivity tester in case you get in an area where you shouldn't be. And you've seen these routers. Well, let me tell you, they now are bigger, better, and more powerful. And they did a great job of doing a lot of the demonstrations, and they are RF non-susceptible. We saw a lot of robots, and instead of hand wiring the robots, you actually have modules now. And you can get them to go upside down, right side up, do flippy flips, over, unders. But it's a great way to get kids involved in thinking about electronics and radio. And they're just sort of like a snap kit, but for robots. So a great way to entertain kids in the classroom and get it interested. All right, here is the Home Patrol scanner. Look at the handheld. It's a $500 scanner, but Paul Opitz was just delighted to show everybody the new version 2 of Home Patrol. Ties right into your computer to get radio reference updates whenever you need them. And this is the mobile version, about $600. You just add your zip code or add a GPS that Uniden has available, and it'll find your position and then find all of the different frequencies around you. And, of course, it can also update. There's a little port on the back of the radio. So a lot of high-tech scanners, all of that happening at the International Consumer Electronics Show, now in its 40th year. So it was fun in Las Vegas, Nevada, checking out the CES show. We didn't see any Chinese radios pouring in, so it looks like things are stable there. But the CES show was a great one, and we encourage all of you, if you have any type of business relationship in the card, you can go to CES show next January yourself. So, Bob, let me go back to you, and then we'll come back a little bit later on and give you a preview of Quartz Fest coming up this weekend. Back to you, Bob.
Okay, yeah, we'll see you down the line here in the show, and I want to talk about Quartz Fest, so we'll get that going. Well, that's great, and I used to go to that show for, you know, I was on KMOX for 25 years as High Tech Heil, starting back in 77. I remember one of the shows, because we'd do them live reports back to the station and the network. And I remember one year they gave me this little round disc and they said, wow, you're going to be able to put music on this thing. And I'm going, well, that'll be better than my Norelco cassette. And along came the CD, and then we went through cell phones and satellite, and that was an exciting time. And it got to the end when I kind of ended all that show, that there really wasn't a lot happening. There was a lot going on, but the technology wasn't like it was 25 years ago, at least in my book. It was really a fun time. Well, I'm glad you went, and thanks for the report, and I'm glad you made it home safe. Well, last week, you know, we talked a little bit about some receiver things that I was playing with, and I got a whole raft of emails from you guys and gals, and I really appreciate it when you tell us what you like, what you don't like. And so I put together a little video, a couple of them, about how to adjust AGC on a receiver. So let's roll this first one. These are kind of the same, but not really. I got an idea from the first one. So we'll do this first and then talk a bit before we do the second one.
When you squeeze it together, it'll fit through the hole, and it snaps in place. That's how it stays there. And you just have to reverse the process.
So, okay, the two portions that run vertically before they run inward, those are oriented vertically along with the run of the wire?
No, it would be like a T at the end of a piece of wire, except it's two leads that could be squeezed together to get rid of the T handle.
Huh? I don't know if I can envision a T. I thought it were two. There were two things that went into the hole there in the glass.
There is. At the end of the wire is a clip. It's almost like a horseshoe. In fact, it would be a lot like a horseshoe with extended ends on it.
So the ends would turn into the picture tube. So it would come up like a fork. like a fork, but the tongs would be bent in one direction, you know, a fork with like...
You can hear how the slowing down the AVC really helps because it gets rid of the noise because it holds the signal up and it decays and it really works nice. And with the ICOM, that was a 7600. It has three, slow, mid, and fast. And sometimes mid works just as well, but I usually use either slow or fast. Now, here's the next one. And this, again, notice what happens when you lower the RF gain. You know, a lot of guys and gals think, man, I got to have my receiver wide open. Well, it's not like driving a NASCAR because when you have a receiver wide open, yeah, the S meter's hanging up here and everybody's great, but the noise signal to noise ratio is awful. So let's listen what happens when you properly adjust a receiver, reducing the RF gain, setting up the right AGC, and let's see what happens here. You'll be able to hear it, I think. By the way, it was very noisy this night.
The waterfall already into the software, and QSDR also has.
Turn off that preamp.
It's quite efficient, but
put in some attenuation.
The smart HDR.
What happened to the noise floor?
And if they will do it, and not a ham, they really don't know what they're doing. So you end up with a darn mess unless you're able to be right there with them and walk through every step.
It just comes popping out of there.
In my case, I can do everything with my climb tower.
If I open it up again,
I put together.
You can't hardly understand
that
it. Roll it all off.
Like you said, you'd have to do all the fittings yourself to make
it's
sure.
Pretty it's pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, only two. There's two I got there. Very reliable, and they do know what they're doing. And that's Mac, and I know you've never talked to Neil. K4ESC. Echo CR Sugar Echo.
Boost the RF gain, turn off the preamp, add some attenuation, adjust to the slow AGC, and bingo, you got it. And these signals are not copyable before you do that. And I hear a lot of guys will say, oh, it's too noisy tonight. Well, if you adjust your receiver properly, sometimes the noise can really be subsided. It's all about signal to noise ratio and adjusting that receiver. Because a lot of guys say, oh, they want to look at that S meter. I don't care about that S meter. I only care about one thing, what's coming out of the headphones or the speaker. And adjusting that receiver will give you sometimes some really great copy above the noise. Well, I told you it was a really nice 50 degree day. And I had this antenna I put together a long time ago. It was a 21 meg 15 meter dipole, just two pieces of wire and coax. And so I had a spare coax. I don't know. And I went, it was 50 degrees. I pulled it up and I was listening around on 15 meters. And look what happened to me. Let's play this little short video. This is Japan barefoot with a dipole.
Thank you very much for the nice contact. I hope I will meet you again very soon. Sayonara from Western Japan. K9 EID JA3 at Boston Ocean America. Greeting for your friend above, guys.
Thank you very much, Hito. I appreciate you coming back. And we will look forward to working you again here on 15 meters. Very nice signal. JA3BOA from K9EID.
Okay, thank you. You're picking S9. So please update
the wow.
Reporters 5 and 9. 73, K9EID, JA3BOA. Now clear, here's the QRZDX.
Now, I only did that because, first of all, I just wanted to see what that dipole did, and then I thought, whoa, here's Japan. I thought this would be fun to share with the Ham Nation audience, because so many of you write me, oh, man, I don't have a big antenna and I don't have an amplifier. You don't need it. I mean, that antenna is only about, I don't think it's 35 feet high. And I just pulled it up with the spare ropes and plugged it into the 7600. And as you saw, it was just 100 watts. I did one thing wrong. I wonder if anybody saw it. And I did this purposely. And you shouldn't really do that. However, if you notice that, I had my ALC too high. I had my mic gain just a little bit too high. It was just poking over the red mark. Shouldn't do that. Really shouldn't be running that much ALC. But I wanted to see if anybody would see that. Because normally ALC should run down pretty low. You shouldn't really see a lot of ALC activity. Power will still be up there. But I just thought I'd show you. And, of course, it sounded great. And I was very, very happy to work. Hedo was his name. And let you guys and gals see that it isn't all about big Yagis and lots of power. It's about throwing something up and getting on the air and having fun. You never know. It's like fishing. You're going to go out there and you don't know what you're going to catch. But I was really thrilled to do that. And I did it barefoot. Little old 35, 40-foot dipole with a couple of pieces of wire. So there you go. And, of course, I had the PR-22, so the audio was right. The 7600 gives me some equalization, and I can roll that low end a little bit and punch up that mid-range, and you heard the report. So that was what was going on here this week, and I really had a lot of fun. And it's great to share that with you, because I think that's what this show's all about. And anything that any of us can do, why, let us know. Don, are you you've been on the air this week? What's going on down there in your activity?
I haven't been on the air much this week, but during the days off for holidays, and I took a few days off last month as well. But I have worked a little bit of the W1AW and the W100AW stuff. I've gotten to get a little bit of that in the log, so that's cool. Touching on ALC, it just struck me. You said you were running your ALC hot. For those of you who run PSK31, and you see on the waterfall, you're looking at these really, really, really faint little signals, and all of a sudden this real wide, wide streak comes under your waterfall, and it wipes everybody else out. That is someone who is running way, way, way too much audio in there. The best way to adjust, if you're running PSK31, you look at that ALC, you should not see any ALC at all on your transmit signal. If any at all, maybe just tickling the bottom just a little bit, but really, you don't want to see any ALC on your transmitted signal at all, or you're going to be the guy that everyone's complaining about that's really, really, really wide and really loud and wiping out all those other things. So ALC is a wonderful tool, and I'm glad that you got to touch on that a little bit. Let me touch on something that is kind of neat as well, and that is in the mobile phone world, it's a company called Ting. Ting is what you call an MVNO. They are a reseller of the nationwide Sprint network. And the thing about Ting, what makes Ting different, is there's no BS. There are no contracts. There are no early termination fees. There are no there's just no bull with Ting. If you're paying an early termination fee to come to Ting, they'll help you out with that. They will give you credit for 25% of the early termination fee, up to $75 per device. You just purchase your new device through Ting, port your number, submit your final bill with your ETF detail from the previous carrier, and they'll help you out with that. Ting.com/ETF has all the details on that. Also, you pick the size of rate you want, extra small through double extra large, service levels for voice, minutes, text messages, and megabytes of data. And there's no bundling or ride-along services. Everything is billed separately with Ting. The other guys charge you if you go over your allocated minutes or text or data. You don't have to worry about that with Ting. If you have a little bit heavier month, you just pay for what you used over and above your normal. It's easy as it can be. Voicemail, caller ID, tethering, hotspot, three-way calling, all the good stuff, call forwarding. All those features are all part of the service. They're not add-ons with Ting, and there's no little weird, mysterious line items on your bill. Oh, well, what am I paying for here? No, they charge you for what you used, plus whatever taxes they are legally required to collect. There are no hidden charges, no recovery fees. None of that stuff with Ting. And you can have as many devices as you want on one plan, sharing your pooled minutes, your messages, and your megabytes. Each device on the plan costs a flat $6 a month. Yes, it makes sense. Ting. And also, you can take total control of your account, your usage, your bills. There's a wonderful online control panel. And if you do need to talk to someone, you call 1-855-TING-FTW. Think about that. Ting for the win. You call anytime, half the day. Yeah, they're open half a day. Yeah, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. EST. A real person will pick up the phone and talk to you. And you can do everything online as well. Help.ting.com has active customer forms, a wonderful help ticketing system, video tutorials, video startup guides, everything you need to know. Here's how it works. You purchase your mobile device from Ting, or you can bring your own. But you purchase your device from Ting, you will get it in 2 to 5 business days. Or, like I said, you can bring over your favorite Sprint phone. Look, I've got this old guy here, this old Samsung Sprint phone here. You know, I suppose if you wanted to, that's 3G, I think. If you wanted to, you could probably pull that over there. Or even your iPhone, like your iPhone 4S or your 4. Check out the full list of eligible phones. You go to the special URL, click on the BYOD link at the top of the page. They will even help you turn on your old device, turn it into cash to help with the move to Ting. Like maybe if this old Samsung isn't quite up to snuff, well, maybe they'll help you get rid of that and turn it into cash. After you activate your device with Ting, you have the option to select a new phone number, or you can use your existing one. They'll break your rates out by minutes, text messages, megabytes, bill you at the end of the month for what you've used. So I want you to go to hamnation.ting.com. You will do a number of things. You'll save money. You'll better manage your mobile phone usage. You can check out the savings calculator, and you can see just exactly how much you or your company can save. And since you're a Ham Nation viewer, you'll save $25 on your first Ting device when you sign up. So it's hamnation.ting.com. Again, hamnation.ting.com. And Ting, we thank you ever so much for being a great supporter of Ham Nation. We love you. Let's head on over to Dale and see what the Show Me Your Shack stuff's all about. Dale, how are you tonight?
Hey, doing pretty good, Don. Appreciate it. Sorry about the Saints there. I'll tell you what, we're in a hurry this evening to try to get two videos on here. So, Brian, if you're ready, let's jump right in to Show Me Your Shack from December. Go ahead. This is Show Me Your Shack, a compilation of shack photos we've received during December and on into early January. Robert Holiday, AD0BM, sent us two photos. Here's his main shack, complete with audio mixer and signal link, and a Dell laptop for digital modes. And this is his mobile rig he uses while on the road. Robert Timmy, W9TNY, sent us this photo of his shack. He uses a Kenwood TS-590 with a Heil PR40 microphone and the Kenwood software for equalization and monitoring. His amplifier is a Heathkit SB1000, feeding either a 40-meter inverted V or an 80-meter fan dipole. He's mounted everything in a discarded entertainment cabinet. We have several photos from Stefan Demos, KA2KNX, who recently finished refurbing his 1970s vintage Kenwood radios. Stefan fixed up the Kenwood TS-530S, along with the AT-230 antenna tuner and the SM-220 station monitor. He's fitting a random long wire antenna temporarily. He's also refurbished this Hammerland SP-600, just made his first contact in 31 years, a straight key CWQSO with Rick Johnson, W3BI. Here's his handcrafted QSL card. John Pugliano, N7PUG of Harriman, Utah, has a beautiful outdoor shack nearby. Here he operates from Bryce Canyon. Michael Logan, KB7IUV, sent us a photo of his nice shack this month. He uses a Flex 3000 and a Heil PR781 microphone with an SB2 boom mounted on a custom-made 33-pound solid steel base. Mm-hmm. All antennas are mounted in the attic.
That's cool.
He's made 78 country contacts and 49 states with these attic-mounted dipole antennas. He got back on the air in April after being away from the hobby since 1990. Susan Kent, KZ9L, of Deer Park, Illinois, sent us a photo of her beautiful shack. On the left, you'll notice several vintage Hallicrafters radios. Her main rig is a Kenwood TS-830S, and she's been QRT for a while because of the antenna problems, but hopes to be back on the air soon. And finally, Ronald York, KB1YPP, sent us this photo. Here's the backstory. Ron said that while making HF contacts, his cat came in the shack. A local VHF station called him, when all of a sudden the cat turned around and looked at the scanner. Another priceless moment in the nine lives of a cat. And that's it for December's shack photos. We'd like to get a photo or two of yours on Ham Nation. So make sure you send your shack photos and your video links to hamnationvideos@twit.tv. And for guidelines, please check out hamnationvideos.info.
Oh,
we really
those were
do
really,
want to
really
show
good.
Your shack on to the Ham Nation audience. But a couple of things you could do that would help when you send your photos, please include a caption and describe the highlights of your shack. The more detail, the better. We can cut it down to fit without a problem. One more thing, if you could provide the phonetic pronunciation of your name along with the caption, hey, that'd be great too. Well, we're in the ARRL centennial year now, and the celebration and special events have just begun. One of the first was the W1AW Slat 4 operation in the Potomac Valley Amateur Radio Club. Here's a report from Mark Sullivan, W4MPS.
This is Mark, W4MPS in Raleigh, North Carolina. The American Radio Relay League is celebrating its 100th anniversary in 2014. Starting in January, the headquarters call sign W1AW will be on the air in each state and many territories. Complete details about the year-long celebration can be found on the ARRL website. Operators from the Potomac Valley Radio Club, North Carolina chapter, were selected to represent North Carolina and to operate as W1AW Slope 4 during the first week of January under the coordination of Howie and 4AF. Pileups were huge at times, and it was an exciting week for all who participated. Let's take a look at some of those operations.
Whiskey 9, Charlie, November, 5-9, North Carolina.
QSL, you are 5-9, 5-9 in December, Colorado.
Thank you, 73. Whiskey 1, Alpha, Whiskey, Stroke 4.
Right, thank you for North Carolina. Good morning. Nice signal, 5-9, San Francisco. Thanks for the new band, and enjoy. 7-3 from
The Echo 7 Delta X-ray Florida. You're 59 in North Carolina. I think it's Victor Echo 7.
We made a special effort to ensure that the digital modes were represented. In addition to RTTY, we also operated PSK31, PSK64, JT65, and JT9 modes. During the weekend of January 4, W1AW Stroke 4 made a total of 1,627 QSOs while participating in the ARRL RIDI Roundup as a checklog station.
November 2, Juliet Charlie Sierra.
November 2, Juliet Charlie Sierra, 5-9, North Carolina.
QSL, you are 5-9 in North Texas, over.
Thank you very much for this. Whiskey 1 Alpha Whiskey Portable 4, QRZ.
Kilo 1 Whiskey Tango X-ray.
Kilo 1 Whiskey Tango X-ray, 5-9, North Carolina.
Good morning, Ross.
Thanks, Jerry. I hope you're staying warm up there. Happy New Year. Whiskey 1.
Roger, roger. You're 59 plus 20. You guys got a big signal back this way. That's in Kansas, Kilo Sierra, over.
Okay, thanks. You're very strong as well. 73, Whiskey 1 Alpha Whiskey, stroke 4. November 0, Hotel Whiskey Delta, 59, North Carolina.
You're also 59 in Utah, over.
Okay, thanks. 73.
W1AW stroke 4. Here is Whiskey 4, Mike Papa Sierra calling him by.
Hey, good morning, Mark. How are you? Good to hear you on this morning. Did you
try? Sound good over there. You're 5'9.
All right, roger, roger. We'll stay here. I've got this morning and away we go.
Okay, Bill, fine business. Very good. I'll get you spotted and have fun and enjoy the last day of this special event. We'll catch you later. W1AW stroke 4, W4MPS 73.
On behalf of the Potomac Valley Radio Club, we'd like to say thank you for the honor and privilege of representing the state of North Carolina as W1AW Stroke 4. We had a blast.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, Mark, thank you very much. What a great operation and a great video. Now, that's the way you want to show the Ham Nation audience what your event looked like. We're going to skip by the club website of the week this week and bring it up next week and wrap things up here by telling you it's time to vote for the Ham's Choice Award for videos aired in December. The form is up at hamnationvideos.info, and you can vote now. The voting will take place from now through midnight the 21st, as we'll be presenting the award on the 22nd. The prize this week, the Helping Hands with Magnifier from Radio Shack from Mark down in Derby. Well, that's it. We hope you'll vote for the Ham's Choice Award. And don't forget to send your photos and videos to us here on Ham Nation. Well, that's a wrap for the first Ham Nation video segment of 2014. Good night, all. And Don, he's up next with Newsline. And what's in the news tonight, Don? Go ahead.
Got some good stuff for you. Let's go ahead and get right on into it. So roll that, please. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 1900, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, January 15th, 2014. Ham radio, APRS, and a damaged cell phone were responsible for a quick rescue of a radio amateur involved in an automobile accident in Australia. Graham Kemp, VK4BB of the WIA News, picks up the story.
Jenny, Victor Kilo 4, Fox Juliet Mike Popper, was headed from Singleton, New South Wales, to her home in Killarney, just south of Warwick in Queensland. The vehicle was fitted with a dual-band radio and APRS tracker. Some 3 hours behind was Bob VK4 Delta Alpha, also on his way home to Killarney. His vehicle fitted for HF D-Star APRS. About 2 p.m. that day, Bob received a telephone call from Jenny stating that she had rolled her car, was injured, and trapped in a vehicle. She further explained that her telephone was damaged in the accident and she could only call the last number dialed on the cell phone. Jenny was unable to give her exact location and that she was suffering from a possible broken arm. She also advised the vehicle was on its side, suffered significant panel damage, and she was unable to open the doors or break through a window. Bob was able to pinpoint the exact GPS coordinates of Jenny's location. This information passed on to the ambulance and rescue service that were able to reach her without any delay. The APRS tracker in a car providing Bob the exact coordinates to relay to the emergency services, reducing the delay in response and possible further injuries.
Had it not been for APRS and a partially broken cell phone, VK4FJMP might have had to wait hours longer to be rescued. Bob and Jenny are husband and wife, another reason to have more than one ham in your family. Teachers, would you like to have your class participate in an interactive webcast with an astronaut? NASA's inviting students and teachers to an inside look at America's spaceport at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time, Friday, January 31st. Here's Jim Davis, W2JKD.
Four schools with a target audience of grades 5 through 9 will have the special opportunity to connect directly and ask questions with astronaut and director of NASA's Kennedy Space Center, Bob Cabana, KC5HBV. Now, during this interactive webcast, students can learn about his education and his training, living and working in space, and the future of space exploration. More information, please email rachel.b.power@nasa.gov.
You'll find more information at the link in the printed edition of this week's Amateur Radio Newsline report. And finally this week, January 8th was the 120th birthday of St. Maximilian Kolbe, SP3RN, who is the Catholic Church's patron saint of amateur radio operators. Mark Abramovich, NT3V, has the fascinating story of this amazing man.
Father Maximilian Kolbe became fascinated by the mass media in the 1920s and 1930s. He established printing plants in Poland and Japan for his Franciscan order publications, distributing the tens of thousands to the faithful. When he was on a mission to Japan, China, and India, he became acquainted with both broadcasting and amateur radio. Upon his return to Poland in the 1930s, he applied for a broadcasting license. At that time, radio was considered to be a strategic medium, and only the Polish radio and a military radio station were permitted to broadcast. But in 1938, Father Kolbe was granted permission to do test transmissions close to the 40-meter amateur radio band. He chose the SP3 Romeo November call sign for his on-air experiments. On August 14, 1941, Father Kolbe was murdered in the German Nazi Auschwitz concentration camp after he had volunteered to take the place of another prisoner who was randomly selected by camp guards for a group to die by starvation because another inmate had escaped. Father Kolbe was beatified by Pope Paul VI on October 17, 1971, and canonized as St. Maximilian Kolbe, Apostle of Consecration to Mary, and declared Martyr of Charity by Pope John Paul II, on October 10, 1982. In addition to being embraced by amateur radio, St. Maximilian Kolbe is also recognized as the patron of journalists and political prisoners. His feast day is observed by the Roman Catholic Church on August 14th.
And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news, brought to you each and every week for over 35 years and counting at www.arnewsline.org. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW 73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Isn't that amazing? I had no idea there was a patron saint of amateur radio. Thanks, Mark. That's an amazing story. I'm glad we could get that in. You know, back in Father Kolbe's day, everything was do it yourself. Of course, everything was homemade. There, you couldn't just run down to the store. Well, here in the 21st century, you can run down to the store, and one of the stores that you can run down to will help you do it yourself. I'm talking about DX Engineering, because ham radio is all about doing it yourself, going into your own shop, your own shack, building, creating, and innovating. And DX Engineering can help you do that. If you're planning a tower or an antenna build, check out dxengineering.com, and you can start getting your parts list together. DX Engineering carries quality aluminum and fiberglass tubing to build any antenna or light-duty mast. It's strong, durable, lightweight, available in just about any length you want, multiple outside diameters as well, sized to smoothly telescope with either slit or non-slitted ends, depending on clamping. Your telescoping application is the perfect tubing if you're looking for maximum strength, minimum weight, even at long assembly lengths. And the fiberglass tubing is ideal for antenna supports, perfect for quad spreaders, insulated stacked frames available in 8-foot lengths and multiple diameters. Again, great for push-up masts. It also comes slit and non-slit. And the light gray fiberglass is UV and corrosion resistant. That is very important. And tubing is available separately or in handy kits with perfectly matched components to let you erect your mast without having to assemble a long shopping list. Now, to put your mast or antenna together, you're going to need some clamps. And DX Engineering has the best source they are for virtually every amateur radio clamp application. And there's a good reason why. For instance, these aren't the typical clamps you'll get at your hardware store. No, you're not going to do any plumbing or exhaust work with these. These are tailor-made to the exact tubing OD sizes for radio, broadcast, engineering, amateur, community. This isn't hardware store stuff. This is amateur radio stuff. It's fully tested under the harshest environments and strictest standards. And many of these clamps are specified by government and defense design parameters. They're perfect for building a new antenna or repairing or upgrading one of your existing antennas. They're isolated clamps. They work well on isolated elements. And DX Engineering carries a huge line of replacement and upgraded stainless hardware, too. Bolts, washers, plates, everything you need. Let's talk tools. DX Engineering has commercial-grade antenna and tower tools and components, including must-have tubing tools like pipe and tubing cutters and tube deburring tools. They have basic hand tools, too, from brands like Craftsman, Klein, Dremel. You're putting up a vertical. DX Engineering has guide accessories and tools from Gripple, as long with guy lines, guying rings, tethers, anchors, grips, turnbuckles, and more. This is important stuff, and you need the right stuff to do this stuff with, and DX Engineering is the right stuff. You want to grab any of the gear, get your order in by 10 p.m. Eastern tonight. If it's in stock, DX Engineering will put that bad boy on a truck headed your way tonight. With proven products, expert advice, and the fastest shipping in the industry, DX Engineering is helping you shrink the globe, not just with getting your signal out there, but with getting the stuff you need to get your signal out there. Request your catalog. Shop online 24/7. DXEngineering.com/HamNation. And DX Engineering, thank you so much for your support of Ham Nation. We do love you and appreciate you.
Hey, Don, check it out.
Yes, sir.
Check it out, Don. Check it out. Look at this. Check it out.
Yeah. Well, hey, look, now, check this out.
What's different about this clock? It's a 24-hour clock. You don't see very many of these. Oh, isn't that cool?
I got nothing back behind me, but you know where mine is? Right where I can see it. Look at that thing, huh?
There you go.
Right where I can see it. And yeah, look at that. It's a 24-hour clock, so you never have to worry about, let's see. Is it 8 o'clock or is it 20 o'clock? You know, what is it? Anyway.
That's so right. There you go. There you go. Right. Okay.
Let's head to Jackson and see what I don't know. Is it too late? It's probably not the right time of the year to call him Solder Claus anymore. But George has got his smoking solder stuff going, I'm sure. What's going on, Georgie boy?
Hi, Don. Well, it's turning cold here again. I'm sure it is down there too. You know, we got up almost to the 70s here over the weekend, but it's going to be back down in the 20s again tonight. So that's why
37 here right now.
What was that?
37 here right now.
The same here. Well, I'm doing something a little bit different this week. I'm not going to melt any solder, but there will be some evidence where I have done that before. So let's take a look. You know, every good ham should keep a logbook. So that's what we're going to look at today with the smoking solder kind of twist. According to the ARRL, the reason for logging your amateur activity falls into three categories: legal, operational, and personal. Legally, a log of your transmissions would be invaluable in proving your innocence in an interference complaint. Occasionally, having a log of past contacts is a resource when filling out DX QSL cards that might take months to arrive. And personally, a log is like a personal radio history, reminding you of the people and places you've talked to, the nets you've participated in, and the contests you worked. But I want to add a fourth category here, and that's a maintenance or technical log, where you list your equipment and various repairs and adjustments that you've made on it. That information can come in real handy when you've got problems in the future. You know, I was licensed as N5 SPP in 91, and here's where my log began. Wrote down some measurements here of the Alabama Amateur Quad Antenna. It was an 8-element quad antenna that I used as my first 2-meter, and I had it on a couple of 5-foot poles and a rotor, and I just took the measurements of what I had there. I even talked to the guy who designed the antenna, and he told me how I could take two of them and stack them together and build a harness for them so that I could get more gain out. I never did that. Yeah, I was so excited. I wrote down what I was listening to because I couldn't really talk yet. I didn't have a license. And you can see on the 15th, I installed the quad at 65 feet. Now, what I didn't write here in the book is that this was installed in the top of a pine tree. My friend Jim, you remember my friend Jim?
Whoa, okay.
He climbed to the top of a tall pine tree in my front yard, cut the top out of it, cut some limbs away. Then we mounted a 20-foot push-up pole up there and put the quad up on it. The only problem was when the wind blew, you didn't really know which direction your signal was going. Okay, I did finally fess up here. The 65 feet in the tree pointed south, here's what I had for forward and reflected powers. Now, I did have some friends come over who were ham, so we could transmit on this thing. I was making my list here of all the people I was hearing that I wanted to talk to and the strength of the different signals. I even wrote a little information in here on packet radio because that was pretty big back in 91. if you see where I'm going, this is more of a technical and a maintenance log, although there are a lot of signal reports and stuff in here. You'll see toward the end of it, it kind of changed. I was still a brand new amateur here, and I was really getting into all this stuff, so I wrote down everything. On April the 9th, now this is a long time. I took my test on February 17th. April the 9th, I finally received my technician license, and I could get on the air. So I had some QSOs here. I logged every one of them. I've got the formula for SWR right here. A drawing here of how to build a stacked J-pole, a J-pole on bottom, and then another element on top to increase the gain. Some more packet information, more repeaters that I was hearing. And then you can see here where I installed some cable wave aluminum half-inch line going to the quad up in the tree. I had 88 foot of hard line. It was RG331. And then 10 foot of RG213 for a jumper at the top. And I also moved a 5-element UHF Yagi up there. And I put it on the rotor with 100 feet of RG213. Not very good coax to use on UHF. And it continues on like this for a while. And then you can see I was, I guess this is probably the connector that went to my TNC, but I wrote down the colors of the wires there and the drawing and what each one was. This is before the internet had really taken off, so Jim and I were trying to get it to where we could send files back and forth over the air, and we finally did manage to do that. And some more information here on setting up my TNC. Back in those days, you pretty much had to have a hardware TNC. They weren't these programs out there that you could run on your computer and use with a sound card. You physically had to have a piece of hardware to do that. And here's a drawing of a friend's Ringo Ranger 2 and some of the links on it. Some measurements on a new antenna. I put up a diamond dual-band antenna on top of the 125-foot tower next door at the radio station. I lived at the radio station in those days. There was a house right next door, so it was kind of nice having that tower. The problem, though, with putting up an omnidirectional antenna like this at 125 feet is you could just about hang up talking on repeaters, because when you keyed up, you were going to bring up more than you wanted to. Here's where I started doing some satellite work. I worked AO21. I also did Mir and a number of others that were out there at that time. Back then, if you wanted to make a modification to your rig, you couldn't jump on the internet and go to mods.dk and download it. However, there was a bulletin board that you could dial into, and you could download this information. Here's the measurements that I found on that diamond antenna when I put it up on top of the tower. And I wrote notes in here like, you know, I found a splice at 45 foot and it was dry. I resealed with 3M rubber tape. A lot of different information here. And these are the type of things that I think should be in a log. Maintenance things that you have done over the years. So if you ever have to go back and look, what was my SWR when I put up this antenna? Well, I've got that information right here. And here's where I passed the general and extra exams. It's my certificate of successful completion. And I continue to write down things that I thought were important. I strung up a long wire antenna. I bought an amplifier, wrote down the serial number there. I wrote down where my amplifier tuning and loading should be at different frequencies. Here's a drawing of my friend Wayne's bug catcher antenna. And then I went through my tuner and I tried a lot of different frequencies and wrote down how the tuner should be adjusted for each of those. And right here, I was adjusting my transmit audio and talking with my friend Jim. And we talked with Bob Howell, K9EID. That's probably the first time we ever talked. Back then, I was using the Behringer mixer that I use now. But I had an Aphex Aural Exciter on there, and I wrote down some of the settings that I had on it while Bob was listening. He kind of helped us tweak our audio a little. Then I converted my AL811H amplifier to run off 240 volts instead of 120, and I wrote down the measurements of the plate voltage right here, as well as the plate current, the grid current, and the power out I was getting. And then I can see where I had to do maintenance on an amplifier at one point here. I replaced the receive relay in it, and then I upgraded it to an AL811HD, which is the same amplifier, except it's got a little bit heavier tank coil in it, and it adds a grid overload relay to it. And you use 572B tubes, and I kept good notes on everything I did there so that I'd have them in the future if I have to go back and repair the amp. Then I talked with Bob again, and Bob still didn't know really who I was, just some guy he met on the air. And here's more information on adjusting that amplifier and how I had to tap a coil inside of there and all my experiences. This is when people were first doing that to that amp, so there was a little learning curve there. Here's where I had some static problems with the TS-2000 that I ended up having to replace the IF filters, and I wrote them down in here. And, you know, that's good information to have. Then I began testing the Linkbox software on a Raspberry Pi computer to put on the repeater over here. I now have that going, and you can look in the last couple of episodes of AmateurLogic.tv and learn how to do that for yourself. And at the end of the year, I said, I'm going to start a new logbook. And I had maybe 3 or 4 pages left in this one. So you'll see when I started out how excited I was about being a ham and how I wrote down everything there was. After I'd been a ham for a while, it kind of slacked off, and I mostly went to drawing antennas, writing down measurements, writing down repairs and such. And then when I upgraded to Extra, you could see where I started writing down QSOs again and call signs of new guys. And then I moved on back into the technical area and started writing down about amplifier modifications, rig repairs, and such. So a good log can do you a lot of good, but don't just keep one just for your contacts. Keep a technical or a maintenance log on your ham gear as well. You'll be glad you did. And I think that's an excellent idea. Well, you can tell because that's mostly what's in my logbook right there. But those things are important. And as a broadcast engineer, you know, that's the kind of logs that that we keep on equipment and such. You never know when something's going to break again the same way it did the first time. And if you got some notes there, boy, it sure is helpful. Or if you want to check your antenna, it sure would be nice to know what it measured when you put it up 2 years ago. Well, you know, I mentioned in there the Raspberry Pi and Echo Link. Well, we got kind of crazy with the Raspberry Pi on Amateur Logic this time around. I did melt a little solder. That Echo Link node is on the air now. And I used one of these and some of this stuff here. It's a circuit writer pin. I made a PC board with it and built my relay interface for the Raspberry Pi and got all that in the last episode we posted yesterday. So you might want to check that out. It was a lot of fun, and there's some interesting characteristics to this little circuit writer that I'll mention in there. It's going to do some more experimenting with that, though, but right now, let's give away something. I had asked last week, before there was SOS, there was another three-letter Morse code signal used for radio distress. What was it? And I had a winner here, Doug Wilkerson, AA0DW, and about 174 other people got it right, too. I was a little surprised. Doug said, hi, George. Before SOS, the call was CQD, General CQ, followed by D for distress. Well, congratulations, Doug. You're going to win some Howl wire, this great audio cable here, 2 conductors for your audio, a silver-plated shield, a braided shield, not a twisted one, and a couple of more pairs there for headphone audio or push-to-talk or just whatever you want to use them for. Really nice and flexible rubber jacket on it. So congratulations. That's coming your way. And I've got another piece of wire here, and I suspect Bob and Gordo will remember this. This was a MFJ G5RV antenna. I say it was because we needed a piece of ladder line when we did the Midwest ARRL convention here a few months back. So I dropped by and asked Richard at MFJ if he had any, and he said no, but he had a G5RV. He gave it to me, and we promptly cut it apart. So I have a G5RV kit here that we're going to give away. If you'd like to win that, then answer this. What is the lowest frequency a technician may transmit on? And send that answer to hamnationcontest@gmail.com. And maybe you can melt a little solder and put this thing back together.
I love it. I love it. That's great.
Well, what do you think about that logbook, Bob? Is that a good idea?
Well, let me. I dug mine out. This is a logbook from 1961, 62. I have a lot of my logbooks all the way back to the very first one in 56. But I dug this one out the other day because it had a contact in here with a, this is all 6 and 2 meter stuff. And I too, I kept a lot of notes of different things that I was doing because we were doing so much experimenting in those days. I was one of the first single sideband operators on 6 meters and 2 meters back in 1958 with that 20A. And a transverter that I built. And we even put that on the market. It was a marketable thing that happened in 61, 62 called Melco. There's still some of them out there running around. I agree with you, George. Keeping notes is really, really important. And I wish more would do it. But, you know, sometimes that isn't happening. Really good stuff. I'm glad you did that. Thanks a lot.
Oh, thank you, Bob. Yeah, I was starting a new book, and I just thought about it. You know, most folks probably, well, I don't, I wouldn't say most, but it's kind of leaning toward, you get the impression that you should log contacts and that's it. But really, you should log everything. I mean, you never know when you're going to need that. And I sure had a blast going back and looking at my so far 22-year ham career and seeing some of the crazy things I had done in the past. Well, right now, ICOM's got a message for us here on some great deals.
Some great D-Star radios have entered the market in the last year, but let's not forget all the solid analog radios out there. From radios strictly on 2 meters to dual banders with analog capability, ICOM has your complete analog solutions this fall. Check out ICOM's compact military rugged 2-meter IC23H mobile, 65 watts of stable output. Oversized tuning dial is easy to use. It's got 4.5 watts of loud audio and 270 memory channels and multiple scan options. Consider the ICV8000 for your next mobile adventure on 2 meters, 75 watts of output power, a rugged die-cast aluminum chassis, and fast memory scanning with dynamic memory scan. ICOM's IC7000 is an all-mode HF, VHF, UHF mobile. It's a compact radio with a colorful high-res display, dedicated interface keys, and great tuning knob, built-in DSP noise reduction and filtering, and it's popular for de-expeditions and field days as well. Looking for rugged, easy-to-use handhelds with plenty of memory channels, loud audio, and long-lasting battery life? The ICV80 and the V80HD is a 2-meter handheld with 5.5 watts of high power. A built-in BTL amplifier helps deliver 750 milliwatts of loud audio, and it's great for noisy environments. There's 207 memory channels, and the HD version includes radio, lithium-ion battery pack, and a rabbit charger for up to 19 hours of operation. The ICT70AHD is a dual-band transceiver for classic operation on 2 meters and 70 centimeters. Like the V80HD, this version includes the radio, lithium-ion battery pack, and the rapid charger for up to 19 hours of operation. It's easy to program with a simple keypad, large backlit alphanumeric display, and it has 700 milliwatts of loud and clear audio, 302 memory channels, and fast scanning features. Why not take a look today? Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur for more information on ICOM's analog ham radio selection.
And after the show today, tune in and win. You've got a chance to win some great swag prizes from the ICOM swag store. That's ICOMswag.com. We want you to go to ICOMAmerica/hamnation and register. You could win some of these prizes. No questions. All you got to do is go register. But for January, there's going to be a grand prize drawing for an IC2300H. That's a rugged 2-meter transceiver with 65 watts of stable output, 4.5 watts of loud audio, built-in weather alert function, and it meets the MIL standard 810G specifications. So go to ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation after the show this evening and after every episode of Ham Nation and throw your name in the hat. You could be next month's lucky winner. Well, right now, let's bring Cheryl on and see what's been going on in the chat room. Welcome back, Cheryl.
Oh, thank you, George. Hey, Happy New Year, everybody out there. I appreciate being here tonight. So much fun. First off, I'm sorry I didn't get to see you last time, but I had to share this with you. I got this for my holiday season gift, and it is my North Pole communicator, as you can see right here. And it's also got a dial so I can get frequencies and everything here. As you hear it,
wow.
It's a radio too. But my question, Bob, if I want you to put a Heil element inside this, can I get one from you custom made? Do you think you might be able to do that? This can get Santa and the elves and everybody. So I just want to know, can you do that, Bob?
Well, everything's possible. It just depends on what kind of stuff we got to go through to make it happen.
Well, I got a lot of faith in your creativity, so I bet you I could send it to you and you could figure something out. But in the meantime, let's jump into some questions. I have more than the time is allotted, so if I don't get to yours this week, we'll have to do it next week. But I did want to say thank you, DX Engineering, for my beautiful 24-hour clock for also that was sent here. Yep. So thank you so much for that. And Bob, the KF4 GTA, he says, Bob, is that a Tektronix oscilloscope over your left shoulder? Bob?
Mm-hmm. Dual trace. Okay. Yeah, it's an old one, but works great.
Oh, mm-hmm. Great. Another microphone question for you. What do you recommend for an FT-847 using a Behringer 802 or 802 mixer? Can you tell someone?
Well, a mixer, there's no question. I'd use a 781 into that mixer, and then you can drive just about anything. Mm-hmm. That little 847s, that'll work. Yep, no problem.
Even the new 781? How about the new one?
Yeah, the gold one.
Yeah, let me see that. Hold that up. Let me see that. Is that what you're using tonight? Lovely. Gosh, is that beautiful.
No, it's the regular PR-781, but the president, the ramrod of Heil Sound, which is Sarah, she thought it should have gold on it. So that's what we're doing now. We have a gold one, and it's pretty. But same thing as a 781.
Beautiful. Yeah, the Commander-in-Chief, definitely. And Happy New Year to you too, Sarah. Okay, and Bob, last but not least for you is, can you tell us your thoughts and comments on your Drake 2B receiver from Bill, KA2OFM, wanted to know?
Oh, I love it. It's a very unique receiver, and there it is right there. And it was a great thing when it first came out. It was kind of a competition with the Mosley and the Drake. They were fighting each other. And, of course, the Drake won out because of longevity. But I use it with the HT37. I love it. It's great on sideband, and it's really good on AM. So, yeah, it's a wonderful little receiver, and the Q multiplier and stuff's built in the speaker. That's what's above it. Yeah, I like it. It's a very, very nice receiver. Different, but good.
Thank you. And LPK loves the Drakes too, by the way. And that's such a nice thing to have that you've got there. Very nice. And let's move on to George. I do have a question from a nearby ham in Wisconsin, KC9UDA. Mr. Tom has a question here. He says, when I key up my HF rig or my 2-meter radio, I put lines on my computer monitor. I move the computer and I'm still getting lines on my monitor. Any suggestions? George, over to you.
Don't do that. Don't key the radio. No, actually, you've probably got RF coming back down your coax into the shack. I'm just guessing on that one. You might look up a one-to-one ballon or choke, or it's called an ugly ballon, and you might try that out there before the coax comes into the building. Ferrite beads, there's a lot of different things you can try, but the one that works is the one that you want to use.
Absolutely. I love that. And by the way, I liked your line earlier there that the solder clause has definitely left the building, George says. So thank you for your answer, George. And Gordo, I haven't forgotten you, and I have a bunch of questions I need to ask you, so I'm not sure if I'm going to get to all of them, but let's try some here. Okay, we have an email from Stefan, and I guess he restored his old Kenwood TS-530S, and he established his first QSO in over 31 years, and he had some sort of CW QSO with a random length antenna. But his question is an 800 hertz shift in the displayed frequency and expected behavior when changing to send mode on the Kenwood TS 530S. And first off, I want to preface that with my own input. Is would that have something to do if somebody's just using a Keir on standard sideband mode versus being in a CW mode? I guess there's some radios that have the ability to do CW mode, or some people just use a straight key on sideband mode. So I'm going to preface it by that. So over to you with your technical answer, Gordo.
Yeah, that's a normal mode, and I also read his email. So yes, that's the offset, so the other station doesn't have to tune around looking for your signal. If we didn't have the offset, he'd be zero beat, and the other station all would hear clicks. So that's common, and some radios show it, some don't, but that's a very popular mode on that particular radio. And he also says, should he use his RIT? No. Don't use your RIT, or else you'll be chasing each other up and down the band as each of you try to tune everybody in. So no RIT, and that 800-hertz shift is common.
Great. And did you have fun at the CES show, Gordo?
Oh, yeah. CES was great. And in 2 weeks, we're going to have some additional CES shots of a very special helicopter. Not a four-blade, not a two-blade, but a six- and an eight-blade helicopter.
Wow.
They had helicopters all over the CES floor, and we're going to show that to you in 2 weeks from tonight.
That sounds terrific. I've got a good friend out there, JD, watches the show. He flies a helicopter with some real heavy-duty video equipment that's just awesome, by the way, and he's a really good pilot, too. So anyhow.
Oh, yeah.
Especially, he really has that down, and I don't think that's easy by any means. And here's another question. Going into the Quartz Fest next week, where might one find the W7Q special event station on 10 meters, technician class frequencies? Gordo?
Okay, we're going to be using the ICOM 9100. Thanks, Ray, for outfitting us again with that great radio. And Pat Marcy, thank you for getting it to us. And we'll be hanging out at 28.4 up to 28.425. So 28.400, upper sideband. Listen for W7Q, the Quartz Fest special event station, will be on continuously.
Okay, good, good. And is there any local hotels, Gordo, at the quartzite, I guess, where people can stay after taking some of the ham seminars in case they don't?
Negative. There's no hotels. There's no hotels, no running water, no electricity, no water truck, no dump station. There is nothing but great hams at Quartz Fest, says Chris Weed.
Just tents only, then, I take it. Tents or mobiles, right?
That's right. And we find folks camping out on the floor, camping in their vehicles, or someone sharing their big motorhomes, and that always happens.
Well, seriously, Gordo, if there was a lady that was going along with her ham husband, and she says, I have to stay at a hotel, how close is the nearest hotel, seriously?
Probably a state away. Truly, Quartz Fest is solid. I don't think there's any in Blythe because they had the Bluegrass Festival.
Okay, well, there you have it. That's what's happening at the Quartz Fest. So he has it all down. He has some great shots of that, too. So, everyone, I want you to tune into the after-show QSO on 75 meters, as you can see over my shoulder on the external monitor off of the ICOM 7800 there. It will be 3847 or 3.847 megahertz tonight, and I'll be running the after-show QSO. I'd love to talk to you. My first time here in 2014. David took over for me last week. Well, there was a little bit of a problem, and I hope he did a good job. I hear in the chat room he did a great job. So in the meantime, we will crank up the linear and throw on another log, like I always say. So until the next time, I'm Cheryl Lassick, K9BIK, 73 all, and I'll see you right here next time on Ham Nation. And back over to you, Bob.
Okie doke. Very good. Very good. Chat room was really busy tonight, and we appreciate all of that. So thanks for your help, Cheryl. And everything was really super tonight. I appreciate everybody being here. Gordo, you are headed to Quartz Fest, right? Big deal, right?
It is a big deal. Literally hundreds of motorhomes and probably 500 or 600 hams all converge together 5 miles south of Quartzsite, Arizona. And we have a ball with seminars, bonfires, movies on the side of big white vans. It is from dawn till well after evening hours, a learning experience with seasoned hams sharing everything they know about many specific topics.
Well, it always looks like a lot of fun, and I know that you enjoy going there and camping out. So we'll look forward to a lot of pictures, videos, and then you're going to do some live stuff from there, right?
Yes, we'll be on the air. W7Q, I think that's a call sign, special event station, and we're going to try and go live with you with the spread spectrum. And with some of the other comms that they have to get us back into the internet. So look for us maybe next Wednesday.
Okie dokie. That'd be good. That'd be good. George, you have any of the doodop frequencies and D-Star stuff? Anything happening tonight?
Yeah, the EchoLink net is going to be at the conference server star, do drop in star, or node number 355-800. And the D-Star net is back in full swing on Reflector 14 Module C. And I hope to hear you there. I'm going to try to make all the frequencies tonight.
Oh, that's great. Okay, everybody. Well, I think we've wound it all up for another great show here on Ham Nation. And be sure and tell your friends. And, of course, you can go dial it up anytime. Just put Ham Nation into Google and you're there. All 130 programs. It's amazing. This is a 130th program. We thank Leo Laporte for all of his bandwidth, time, and production. And thanks to you, Brian and Carson, all the guys out in Petaluma. You guys do a great job. And I know we run you guys crazy trying to keep this all going. So we'll see you somewhere. I'm going to head off to 75, maybe 40. We'll go up to 72, 68, I think, is where they'll be with Mike and the guys. So who knows where we'll be, but we'll be somewhere. Have fun and exercise those transmitters and receivers. We'll see you back here next week right here on good old Ham Nation. 73 from K9 EID. Bye-bye for now.